Proper Shite.
Hello and welcome to a very special episode of Be Right or Proper Shite Reviews, the review series where we decide whether a film is a bit of all right or proper shite. This week we're doing something different, drawing from another passion of mine, something that is very close to my heart, if you couldn't tell already. Leeds are back in the Premier League after 16 years away from the big time, and this weekend they take on Arsenal, which leads, me onto a very special guest of ours. He's been here before for our Real Natter series, and he's very confused, bless him, but I'll let him explain that. He's the one, the only, the UK's beardiest and best competitive food eater. It's the ever-charming Beard Meets Food!
Yay! I like the Leeds joke. That's about my level of humour there. I like that. But yes, I'm fine, thanks. Just sorry that I can't be there in person to, you know, admire your 8-inch arms up close, but that's locked down for you. So.
Oh, yeah, you know, I might take back the ever charming bit of that. How's it going? How's lockdown for you? You all okay? I presume you're still chugging away. And I saw your regular show food thing, so you're just doing stuff at home now as well.
Yeah, lucky for me, I film, a lot of people don't know this, but I film my videos like a month in advance usually. So I had a good month of videos to go up onto YouTube. But now I can't go out and film stuff, which is not too bad because it's time for I do a Christmas series every Christmas, which typically is more home baking and, you know, fast food menus and stuff like that. So, yeah, I mean, it's no big deal. It keeps me motivated, you know, because I get messages from people saying, oh, you know, I'm bored in lockdown. I'm looking forward to Thursday's video or Sunday's video. So that's what gets me up in the morning. So I can't complain.
Very good. No, I'm glad you're doing all right anyway. I assumed you would be able to continue, you know, be prepared and all that.
You can always eat. There's always stuff to eat. Doesn't matter what's going on. You can always eat stuff and make it fun.
Until they announce some sort of panic lockdown and everyone eats all the rice and the bread and just all the long life stuff that just disappears off shelves.
I think we'll be all right. I think we'll be okay.
How was you coping without toilet roll?
I think that was like way over. It was exaggerated, you know. Like I funny enough, there was a, right before gyms closed, there's a gym near me that I was going to, and there was a weird kind of like a warehouse which stockpiles stuff next to it. And they had, I'm not joking, about 40 pallets worth of like of toilet roll. They had a big sign on this and like toilet roll, like £3 for 10. And I'm thinking, I don't know if that's good value for money, but anyway.
I drove past a garden centre that had a big sign saying that they were selling toilet roll. And I was like, this has gone too far. I only say it because I was thinking of you, you know, consume a lot of food and, you know, I thought that toilet roll would be quite high up the potential list.
We're pretty, because of that, we're well stocked up anyway. Like, I think we've probably got like
just a cupboard, 40 just rolls full. In.
Yeah, pretty much. That's how it goes. Yeah, pretty much.
Fair enough. So it's your fault. Yeah. I mentioned in that little intro, that very, very well scripted intro, that you're a little bit confused. Now, obviously this theme is because we've got Leeds versus Arsenal coming up this weekend. We're both football fans. We've known each other for a while and we both like films, funnily enough. But you're a little bit confused. There is a reason why I've picked this particular weekend. So would you like to explain what's going on, what I'm getting at?
Maybe you're going to have to tell me. Well, the reason we're doing it is because I'm an Arsenal fan.
Yes.
In part, and you're a Leeds United fan.
There we go. That was the bit I was after. I was just after the part bit. You've suddenly decided that Leeds might be a bit more interesting now that they're back in the Premier League.
Well, that is a little bit cynical, film fella, if you ask me, because I've always... A lot of my family and friends support Leeds United naturally because I am from Leeds. But so I got grief when I was a little younger for supporting Arsenal. But I think I always followed Leeds as kind of like a second team, and this is a film podcast, right? So I don't want to alienate people with the sports detail, but certainly over the last three seasons or so, I've watched probably at least equally as much of Leeds on TV as I have Arsenal. And it's weird for me because now I find myself almost equally invested in each team's performance, you know. So I'm one of those people that, you know, people hate because they have two teams that they want to do well. But I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. It is going to be weird come Sunday, though, because I'm not sure I'm going to want to win. And we've only played each other, I can think of maybe two or three times in recent memory.
In about FA 10 Cup years,
FA Cup last season, and more, certainly more, something that sticks out more to me is when Henry came back and scored against Leeds in the Cup. But I think now it's got, to me, 10 all would be great.
It's really entertaining, but
yeah.
But we both get a point. fair enough. Yeah. So I just thought we'd sort of explain, like you say, this is a film podcast, so I'm sure people are tuning in for that reason. To be honest, at this stage, because it's me, they're probably not even tuning in for that. They're tuning in because you're on this episode. So.
I didn't want to say anything, but...
Yeah, I'm still a little fledgling with this. I'm still trying to find my feet. So I guess we should probably explain what films we've decided. Obviously, I imagine most people can see, you know, if they've clicked on the YouTube video that hopefully goes along with this podcast, they will know what we're talking about. But in case for some reason you've just blindly bashed on it, we're going to be looking at Goal, Living the Dream, which I've got a confession to make soon. And also, obviously, because, you know, Leeds United, we're looking at a true classic in The Damned United, which I've been wanting to do on this channel for quite a while, but just not really.
Today's the day.
I've not had the right guests. I'm sure I saw Johnny. Now he's also a Leeds United fan suddenly. May have wanted to do that, but I thought I'll pick you because I know that you definitely know what you're talking about when it comes to football. I think. So shall we jump into it? Especially these two films are very night and day, aren't they? One's very modern depiction, and the other one's a very should we say vintage variety of film.
Vintage is good, yeah.
But we'll jump into it right now then, shall we? Transition. So, Goal, Living the Dream. Just before we start, because we had a bit of back and forth. I asked you if you wanted to do this, and you were like, yeah, go on. I remembered, because when you were on the Real Now series, you did say that it was a nice change to talk about something that's not related to food. So that was one of the main reasons that I sort of reached out, other than the football thing. And I thought, Goal is this one film that everyone seems to sort of go on about. There's lots of memes to do with the player, the character. You know, we'll get into that. But my one big confession is that I've never actually seen this film until I watched it for this review. Because you were messaging me and you were like, oh, you've not seen it either. All right, we were bluffing each other then.
I remember when Goal came out, like, because I remember, like, you know, the old fashioned. I say old fashioned. Nobody's been to the cinema for ages, but like me especially. And you know, you would get the big kind of cardboard things advertised. Yeah. I remember the one for Goal at the Showcase Cinema in Birstall. So I remember it coming out, and just never saw it. And normally, you kind of, you know, years later, you would catch it at some point on TV and think, oh, I'll just watch it. But I never did. I kind of still wish I never did, but yeah, I watched it to prepare for this.
Well, I, you know, we clearly bluffed each other out. Because when we were talking about it, we were like, oh, which film should we watch? We should definitely do Goal. I thought you'd seen it, but this will make this even more entertaining because this is completely fresh. I guess in the time-honoured tradition of this podcast, normally, it's usually me and Hi Honey, it's John Wall, and normally on a Be Right or Proper Shite episode, I will ask Johnny to give the premise for this, you know, like very precise, very, you know, contained, his version. It's usually quite funny. So I'm going to let you do it because you're the guest. So tell, if no one has ever seen this before, try to explain in as concise a way possible what this film is about.
Oh, right, okay. I'll give my best shot. Here's my shot at the blurb. So, Goal: Living the Dream is, I think they added that later. I don't think that was in the original title of the film, but it's about a young kid who illegally crosses the border from Mexico into America at a young age with his family. He lives kind of, a relatively impoverished life. His dad's quite an austere disciplinarian, I suppose, and he doesn't want the main character's head in the clouds because he's dreaming about playing football. His dad wants him to be, I can't remember, he's a mechanic or a builder or something. They want to start their own little gig, but the main character doesn't want that. He wants to go play for, he ends up playing for Newcastle United. I was going to say a big team. It's just about his setbacks along the way, and I don't want to spoil the film entirely, but about how that plays out. That was as concise as I can do.
That was pretty good. Normally it sort of like meanders and weaves. Like Johnny will start off really, really good, and then he'll sort of lose what point he's on, and then when he comes back to it, he sort of then inadvertently gives away like the full thing. Good. I liked that you stopped. We're not professional on this podcast. So,
I'm coming for this guy's job. This Johnny guy, I'm coming for his job. That's it.
I'll tell him. This film came out in 2005, which the one thing that shocked me more than anything about it is just how old and how sort of kind of dated even 2005 looks. Now, like, for whatever reason, in my mind, I'm a 90s child, so I look back at the 90s as only being like 10 years ago, even though obviously we're pushing 30 years. So 2005 is still quite a long time ago, but yet in my mind, it's like we're only a couple of years ago, but it's
15 years,
yeah, 15 years, quick maths,
yeah.
So it had a budget of $33 million and a box office, which kind of sort of makes it a success, I think, of 37.6, which kind of shocked me a little bit.
Well, it spawned two sequels, right, as far as I'm aware. So it must have been at least, if not critically acclaimed, then at least financially acclaimed.
I mean, I haven't watched, obviously, as we mentioned, I haven't watched this one before. I've not watched the other two yet. Just going off of IMDb and Letterboxd and just any other review service that you can find on the internet, it just sort of slowly goes off of a cliff and then it just disappears. This one is the critically acclaimed in the series. Wow. It's an interesting film. Is there any particular? I'll let you go first because obviously I just compile a ton of notes and I try my best to not waffle my way through them all. Have you got anything that you like? Is anything that stood out that you just really want to talk about that you like? You watched it and you thought I need to talk about this.
Where to start? I could talk about so many things in this movie. The funny thing is the cast, first of all, is not the guy who plays Santiago Muñez, the main character. I have no idea who he is. I think he's like a soap opera actor, right?
I had a look, and he's not been in the right lot other than these films.
Yeah. Not that he wasn't particularly bad in the film or anything like that. But aside from him, the supporting cast is actually not terrible on paper. You know, you've got I forget the guy's name. Tony. He plays Ugly Betty's dad. Not that I watch Ugly Betty, right? I just know that he's...
Just outing yourself.
He's called Tony something. He's a big character actor. He's been in 24 and a bunch of American, drama series. He's good in it. He plays Santiago's dad. You've got Anna Friel, right? Can't complain about that. And Pollux Troy from Face Off. I don't know the actor's name. So, on paper, I wanted to like it. Start the story is... It's contrived, right? But you're kind of in it.
Yeah.
And the acting is not poor, right? So you don't go into it thinking this is absolutely diabolical.
You don't. When you watch a film like this, if the acting's poor, that is the one thing that you sort of like you're hooked to, and you can't pull yourself away from it. And then it ruins the entire film because the whole film is just you watching the bad acting as opposed to the plot and the story. But you're right. Yeah. This film, even though I know where you're going to end up going with this, but it's not awful. Like it's not so bad that you watch it and you're like, Jesus, this is why. It's not that bad.
No, I was getting there, I think. But the structure of it is, it's not the acting that makes the movie bad. Let's put it that way. For me, anyway. Because it's delivered reasonably well. The part, I think it kind of suffers from the same problem as most football movies, or you could argue sports movies, although there are some good ones. In that, for me, it's like, it kind of stumbles between these interconnected kind of action set pieces, right? Which typically, I don't know what it is with football films, usually, but they generally revolve around the protagonist, right? He kind of walks past a bunch of people defending like crash dummies. And, you know, he pulls off these fancy tricks. The camera will zoom in. He'll score some worldy, like that Maradona goal from whatever it was, the 80-something World Cup. And that's essentially every goal, right? So it's a little bit like watching a Superman movie. There's never any threat to the main guy. You know at the end how it's going to be resolved.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Those are they're so jarring. They take you away from the actual, you know, the kind of struggle of what he's going through, to the point that you kind of think, I'm done with. From the first time you see him play football, you think, yeah, I'm done with this. You know, that's me anyway.
Yeah, no, I get what you're saying. There isn't like, in his life, there's a struggle, but his actual ability and everything that revolves around him becoming a Newcastle United player is just very cookie cutter from one bit to the next bit to the next bit. And it just happens for him. There's a couple of very, very minor setbacks, but in the long and short of it, they're not. Are they?
No, I think the first point at which the plot really fell, let's take aside the action, the football scene, the plot really fell is when Stannis Baratheon, again, I don't know if that's the actor's name, the guy that plays the scout, says, oh yeah, on my say-so, you've got a trial at Newcastle United, just get yourself to Newcastle. Imagine saying that to a kid who's got no money. You're a complete stranger to. I mean, I wouldn't even go out there and I wouldn't go down to the St. James's Park or whatever it's called now, Sports Direct Arena, for a trial on somebody's say-so. And I only live, you know, 2 hours away, not whatever, 18 hours away.
Yeah, so. with all your money. Yeah, that one bit in that in that section, it's just like, he goes back. Why can't he take him back with him? Like, I know there is a plot point that we won't delve into as to why he can't specifically go straight away, but he could have done the same thing that he does and just gone with him and just taken him with him. Like, if he believed in him that much.
Yeah, like, I think there are, I mean, how long have you got? We could go through a lot of, I think probably the one, it could have been for me like a 2 out of 5 movie, right? It could have been, I could have just been like, it's not great, I wouldn't recommend it, but it's not the worst film I've ever seen. The point at which it probably became a 1 out of 5 stars movie for me was when it pans to LA, and you know what, you probably know what I'm going to say, and there's a bar full of Jordan watching in Newcastle United shirts, admittedly watching on Fox Sports or whatever. But they're watching, I mean, I've been to LA, right? I remember trying to watch football when I flew out there for the Gyoza Championship last August. And it's basically on regular TV. Nobody cares about it. So the thought that you would have a bar entirely full of Newcastle United fans wearing Newcastle United shirts, speaking with Geordie accents in the middle of LA is just, that's the it jumps the shark at that point. You're just like, no, I'm not in this anymore. This is just ludicrous.
See, I were a bit more generous with like the rating that I've given it. I'll mention it soon. But like, I think it's more because compared to what I was expecting, I enjoyed it more. And I kind of did enjoy it, even though it is ridiculous. But that bar scene, the cameo from Brian Johnson from AC/DC is just, he has like 2 lines. And it's insane. I know he's not meant to be playing Brian Johnson. He's meant to be just playing himself because he's a Newcastle fan in real life. But yeah, it's just very jarring.
it's just I think maybe insane. I'll give it, if we're going to kind of condense it to a star rating, I would probably give it 2 out of 5. But that scene just had me thinking, what were the people that wrote this movie thinking? I mean, most of the people who are going to watch this are going to full well know that would never, ever happen to the point that it's, you know, it almost takes you entirely out of the film. But apart from that, it does have moments in there that you enjoy. You know, that's quite an emotional finale. I don't want to give it away if anyone watched it, but I don't mean the thing that happens at the end, but he kind of gets what he's been created. He has a strained relationship with his dad, and, you know, he learns that his dad has come to accept what he chose as a career, let's put it that way. So it's not a throwaway movie, but it's not a good film.
I mean, we would be insane as actual, you know, UK British football fans to not mention it. But what did you make of the actual player cameos in this film? I mean, won't ruin all of them, but there's some very... Do you think, if anyone... It's hard, because I don't know how many people who will watch or listen to this who will know football enough from that time period to know some of the bigger stars that are in it. But because we've already mentioned Newcastle United, Alan Shearer...
Oh, mate, I've got to say, if you want to enjoy it at like a kitsch level, like a tongue-in-cheek level, the cameos, and I get the feeling that's probably a considerable portion of the budget as well, the cameos from the Alan Shearer scene in the gym, oh my, that had me absolutely rolling. Well, he's on, never do leg extensions anyway on a machine, like if you listen to this, just never do that. They have zero utility. But yeah, he's on the machine. He's trying to shift, I don't know, like 40 kilos on one leg or something. He can't do it. And then Shearer comes along, gives him a cheeky little wink, and he throws like 200 kilos on for one leg, and he's just repping it out. And you think, oh man, this is terrible, but hilarious at the same time.
I mean, for me personally, they don't have any lines, but they are definitely in the film in the sense of, because it does clips of, I don't know how they've done it. I don't know whether they've got the players to run alongside past, you know, like in like just one scene, they've had someone run past him in a game, or they've sort of very early CGI, like imposed the game onto the scene. But there's like this James Milner, who... ex Leeds United player. You've got Lee Bowyer, who's in the little gaggle with Alan Shearer on the training pitch. I was just, every time I saw like an ex Leeds player, I was like, ooh, but they've got no lines.
One thing you could say, but how technically astute the film is in some ways, is the way it's filmed, because those are shot, I think, when I look at it, I think they're shot, that's a real, the playing scenes with the real players, Steven Gerrard's in it at one point, they're shot on a cinema cam, but I guess with a telephoto lens because they zoomed in to the action. That's just a real game, I think, that they've had a film crew turn up and shoot. And then you will notice, like, the parts where, I forget the guy's name, Gavin, the guy that's played by the dude that does Pollux Troy in Face Off.
Yeah, so
The other guy, Gavin Harris.
Yeah, like, that's it. Yeah,
big signing.
Yeah, yeah.
So there's a part where he's playing, and you can tell there's an incongruence there. It's not real, right? But the way it's done is believable. So you could say that for the film, that I've not seen another movie that kind of, sports movie that kind of blends them together like that in such a way, which is ambitious, and it worked.
Yeah, no, it did. I mean, as much as we bash the film for like its plot and certain aspects of it in terms of like scenes and stuff, the one thing I will say, especially, I'm presuming you've also visited Newcastle at some point in your life, have you? Yeah,
I've not been to the stadium. I've been to Newcastle, the city.
I've been to a game. I've been to a Leeds Newcastle game where we equalised last minute. Chris Wood, the away stand. Just for anyone that doesn't know, at St James's Park is like up in, like, it's past the clouds. Like, you are so far up into the gantry of the whole stadium that you just, you can barely see all. It's just like watching ants. But we scored, and it felt like that was just going to fall off. But what I'm getting at is the ground, the cinematography for the ground for Newcastle in general, even though it's got that kind of visual tone that makes it look like England, wet and dreary and stuff, it's still like really beautifully done. Like, if you just saw like B-roll of some of this film,
The views, like bits of the stadium, bits zooming into like players, and like you've said, when he goes for his run, when he's training at the beach, all those kind of like the cinematography of it is actually really good. Like it's not world beating, but it's good.
it's definitely at kind of loggerheads with the how poor the film is in terms of plot, etc. The way it's shot is good. You know, you can't say it's not. And like I said, some of the technical, the set pieces and stuff, and the way they're meshed with what is essentially real life playing is it deserves credit for that.
You'll give it that.
Yeah.
So I guess before we move on, there's just some other very, very wee bits that I noticed that we'll just sort of quickly fire through, sort of like a speed round before we move on.
Okay.
We mentioned cameos, but this is a super obvious one, but David Beckham is a terrible actor in this day and age. Also, what's going on with his eyebrows?
He's not in this film there's some, he's had some preening done, but the worst part about that for me is since Goal, he was then in the Guy Ritchie the King Arthur-y thing.
Yeah.
I don't know if it was called King Arthur. And his acting—they've got to be 10 years apart, and his acting has not improved in the first 10 years. You would think it would have done, but David Beckham's is pretty. I my favorite, I think, apart from the Shearer thing, I liked Raul and I'm just spoiling him here. Zidane, because that's got to be the biggest phone-in job of all time. The paycheck—they just turn up, they don't even really say anything, they just mumble a bit and then walk off with a beer, and you're kind of thinking like,
what?
Why were they? What was that about? But Beckham, that was a bit of an odd one. But I think that was obvious at the time it was going to be him, right?
Yeah, 100%. Like, that'll have been in the... I mean, I haven't looked at the trailer, but I imagine something like that will have been in the trailer. It's like, oh, he's in it. And then, like, yeah. The line, one tackle away from flipping burgers. I was sort of mid-drink and I nearly spat it everywhere. It's just... I mean, it's kind of true, you know. Like,
it's good because it is true, yeah.
I mean, in this day and age, some footballers have now got like PhDs and things like that to fall back on. Leeds United's very own Patrick Bamford can speak. Is it like four languages? He's got like a degree, and
he is a bit of a standout there. Let's not say Patrick Bamford is the he's the
benchmark for all
the norm. He's a standout. Love Patrick Bamford, by the way, big fan.
But yeah, just that line was one of the few lines where I thought I need to write this down. It's perfect.
It's a good line. It's a good line, yeah.
And I guess last of all, the meme that I'd seen thousands of times. It's all over my Twitter timeline, on my personal Twitter, which I predominantly talk about football on. Is the full ham.
The bit
at the very end.
that's the big thing. You know when we played against Fulham? Yeah. That was...
I was just howling. So, I mean...
Go on.
No, I was just going to say, like, obviously for anyone, if we do end up with anyone that's abroad listening, it's Fulham. I mean, I know we've got Yorkshire accents, probably a bit of infliction there, but it's just Fulham. It's not full ham. It's not like a packet of ham that's full. It's Fulham. Fulham.
Nobody in England, Scotland, Wales, Ireland, probably even Europe would say Fulham. But I suppose that they're trying to... I wonder if that was intentional, you know, in a way, to try and kind of...
Like spark something.
He's American, you know. He's not from around. Not from around here. That kind of thing.
But, I don't think that it was... I like that, and I will go with that. And I imagine if you mentioned that to anyone that was involved in this film, they'd be like, yeah. But... I think that was exactly how it was meant to be.
One thing, he'd still probably score. I was thinking, watching the film, the first thing, probably about 20 minutes in, I was like, if you were a Newcastle United fan, you'd probably still take Santiago Munez over Joe Ellington or you know, Miguel Almiron, surely. I mean,
hey, back in this film, in this period, you would probably take him over Alan Shearer, because one of the things I did note is, does Shearer actually score in this film? He's got 148 goals for Newcastle in 283 career appearances, stat. And it doesn't have a single bit of footage of him scoring in the entire game.
I think the only footage of There is footage of him playing, right? Does he get, I think, on the counter or something? He comes away with the ball.
There's a bit of a 1-2 between him and Muniz, but he doesn't score. Like,
yeah, but you're thinking, though, Shearer at that age, if he takes the ball from the back four, he's getting caught within about 3 seconds. He can't move anywhere. Man. He's got no pace at that age.
So what you're going with is that it was hyper-realistic for the time.
Oh, yeah, 100%. I think the one thing I was going to mention, which I think probably segues us quite nicely, if you finished on, not on taking up a presenting the show.
go for it.
I was going to say the one thing that really, really irritates me about this and a few other football films is the fact that I don't understand why they can't cast people who can play the game, at least to a Sunday league level. That's something that they do achieve in the next one we're going to talk about, which I mean, arguably is less of a football film. It's really the Dundee United, which we're going to talk about, is less of a film about football. The goal relies quite a bit on the action on the pitch.
Yeah,
and I just the one thing that when the final action, the final goal is scored in the film, let's say that we can say that without giving it away.
The final CGI goal. There's a lot of CGI goals.
Yeah, and I mean, was the free kick? He takes it from basically the touchline. I mean, you're not shooting from there, right? I don't care who you are.
No.
But regardless, when he runs up to the ball, I think he's running up to the ball like my 2-year-old nephew would run up to a ball. It looks like he's never kicked a ball, and I'm thinking, if you're gonna get somebody who's a reasonably unknown actor, just get one that can play the game. You'd probably find one.
Or just, you know, have a couple of sessions on this is how you strike football. You know, if they were presumably they filmed it in the UK, there is a lot, and I mean a lot of teams and a lot of coaches. Even you know, you could have got an academy coach at Newcastle to be like, this is how you hit a free kick. You know, like, you know, line it up like that, get your body in this sort of shape, and that's that'll make this scene. Yeah,
it's probably hard to. I think it's hard to. I think we take for granted, especially in Britain. You could argue probably Europe that. You know, you become reasonably proficient at football, don't you, from a very young age. Most kids, male and female, are kind of brought up around the ball, right? So, but I don't know anything about that actor. But if you've never kicked a ball ever, to come to it completely fresh and then learn, I suppose would be quite difficult. But they don't have any difficulty with that in the next film we're talking about.
No, they certainly do not. I guess like the final thing. Is it a be right or is it a proper shite?
It's proper shite, that, mate. I mean, I wouldn't recommend anyone watch it unless you want to. Maybe you have a few beers and you want to laugh or something.
Have a laugh. I went in. I'm kind of, the more this conversation's gone on, I'm sort of moving my levels a little bit. But I went with a 3 out of 5. The only reason it's gone up 0.5, because I was going to give it 2.5, is simply because it had Lee Bowyer and James Milner in. And
That's the Leeds United fan in you then. You're not being objective.
I'm not being objective and I'm not being a film reviewer. I'm just like, oh, it's got Leeds players in it. Yay. shall we move on to the one that we actually want to talk about then, yeah?
Let's. Transition.
So, the Damned United, I put out a little promo image the other day, but obviously Leeds jumped on the merchandise bandwagon when they got promoted. I mean, the date's wrong. It's like 2 days too late. We got promoted quicker than they expected.
Yeah.
But the Damned United, for anyone that doesn't know, is a film that sort of kind of centres around Leeds United, which is quite a big deal for both of us, I guess, in that sense.
Yeah, I don't know. I would probably describe it a little bit differently. Not that I want to disagree with you. I don't think it really does center around. I mean, it involves heavily Leeds United.
Yeah.
It's just a biopic of Brian Clough, I think.
And yeah, 100%.
In the movie, anyway, the book is a little different. It's a little bit more involved with the time at Leeds United. But
maybe didn't word that quite too well. It's not a film about Leeds United, but it has a focus on Leeds United. Obviously, if you want to watch something about Leeds United, there's a couple of really good documentaries on Amazon. Other than that, yeah, it's literally a biopic about Brian Clough. So in the, again, the time-honoured tradition of Be Right or Proper Shite reviews, would you like to try and summarise the plot of this film? Because I imagine that if anyone does check this out, they'll have no idea who Brian Clough is. Like, just, what are you talking about?
I'm amazed this film ever got made, I'll be honest. But Yeah, I'll give it my best shot, right? Blurb for this one, Brian Clough. Think of him as, the best way I could do it is, think if you, a lot of people will know Jose Mourinho, right? Think of a Mourinho from like 40 years ago, a bit more. So young manager, kind of a really good manager. He achieves great stuff with Derby County. And he, in the wake of Don Revie leaving Leeds United for the England job, Brian Clough steps in, gets a job, and he has kind of a very short doomed reign as the numero uno at Leeds United. And I think that's really the reason the book was written, because I, especially at that time, quite unusual to go such a short time as manager. And it's really, the film isn't really about football.
No, it's not.
In the purest sense. It's about, you know, who Brian Clough was. And a lot, again, I'm surprised the film was made, because it's not something a lot of people, apart from, you know, really enthusiastic football fans like you and me, would be into learning about him.
That was spot on. That's perfect. Thank you. That was
I'm coming
really
for this
good.
Guy's job. I told you.
So literally, as you said, it's more about Brian Clough than anything else, who was an influential manager from like the sort of the mid to late 60s, early 70s, and I guess it touches upon it at the very end of the film. His sort of pinnacle, if you will, is sort of like the late 70s. It's not really in the film. So fans of, unfortunately for Leeds United fans of Leeds United are very much aware of him, even though obviously neither of us were alive at the time. you obviously, Derby County fans obviously will be huge fans, I'd imagine, of Brian Clough. I do have one Derby County friend who I should have probably asked for some sort of interesting quote, but they haven't really got much else to talk about right now. So, and Nottingham Forest as well as another huge club of his that he was involved in. This film was a couple of years after the Girl film. It came out in 2009. Again, I think we'll touch upon this a little bit further into this, but compared to Girl, you wouldn't know if this film came out now, forgetting like what its popularity or if it would even work in terms of the context of the film, like you've said, you probably couldn't tell, other than seeing that Michael Sheen looks very young, that this film came out in 2009, because it's obviously filmed with that sort of like that visual tone. The coloration and everything of it being set in the period it's set. It's very period drama-esque in that sense that if you watched it now and it came out and it was in the cinema now, you'd be like, oh yeah, it's the period drama that they've done on football from 70s. There's a big difference between that and Girl in terms of how dated and undated these films look.
Yeah, for sure. I agree with that. Yeah, I mean, the Dundee United, I don't want to get too kind of film geeky on it, but it's coloured so well, you know. I don't want to dive straight into it, but my favourite scene is the training, the famous kind of landmark scene where Brian Clough's introduced to the first team squad at training, and that whole scene is shot well. But it's coloured so well. It's got like a nice kind of vintage look to it, at the same time as being an obviously modern film. If that makes sense. You're right in saying that if it came out in cinemas now, had it not been released 10 years ago, you wouldn't think it was an old film. It still holds its own like any other film.
Yeah, no, 100%. That's sort of the unfortunate tragedy of it all, is the way that it's held up. Obviously, as we've already mentioned, we're really aware of this film. Some people won't be. Hopefully, if anyone does check this out, that this podcast, they'll hear what we have to say about it and be like, oh, bloody hell, never heard of that. Kind of sounds like an interesting concept. Let's check it out. The sad tragedy of it all is that it had a budget of just $10 million, and yet worldwide it only made 4.1. So this bombed, this flopped hard, even though it is a very beautifully made and well put together film with really like a really strong cast.
Oh yeah, the cast in this movie is great. Like on paper, if you look at it, I wonder kind of how much that was expected by the production company that it would lose money. Because, I mean, It's like we were texting, as the kids say these days, last night. And I said, I can't believe it's like if you made a movie about fishing, you know, because it's not because it's as boring as fishing. Sorry if there are any fishing fans out there, but because it's such a niche subject, it's something that, I mean, you know, my dad would have been interested in, right? Because he knew.
Yeah, yeah.
But it came out at such a time as Brian Clough was long gone, essentially. From at least, I don't know when he died. I think he died after it, but it wasn't active, you know? So it's one of those subjects you kind of think, well, yeah, it's an interesting story. The book was a decent book, but, you know, how relevant is it to a film audience? So to me, the fact that it even just lost, it kind of made 50% of its budget back. Even that's kind of surprising to me.
Yeah, no, I kind of get where you're coming from with that one, to be fair. In the world of sort of success or failure in films, it did in a way fail, but it didn't in the sense of for what it is that it actually, you know, I mean, I should have really made a note, but obviously, as I've already mentioned, not a very prepared podcast. Should have made a note. I'm sure he was either Michael Sheen was either nominated or won some awards for his portrayal of Brian Clough in this, because he is, and you know, I've made a very strong note. He's a scene stealer. He just chews up and churns through the scenes. He's just a brilliant method actor. He's fantastic.
If you're a Michael Sheen fan, if you've seen him in anything, then you think, oh, he's cool. Watch this, even if you don't. Even if you watch one YouTube clip of Brian Clough beforehand, because the impression is just—he's kind of like a—he reminds me. I don't know if you've ever seen The Trip, you know, with Steve Coogan and Rob Brydon.
They make
a lot of the fact that Steve Coogan and Michael Sheen are often kind of compared because they can both do great. I don't want to say impressions because that cheapens it a bit, but kind of takeoffs of of famous people.
They are really good.
Michael Sheen's really good at doing that. The funny thing is, this is a tangent, but Mrs. Beard, right, Lindsay, she's been watching this atrociously bad TV show called Prodigal Son, which Michael Sheen is also in.
I've seen this advertised.
How did they get him to be in it? Because Michael Sheen is just such he's just such a great actor, and in this film he's. Oh man, I was just you just watch you you're basically watching it for Michael Sheen.
Yeah, no, 100%. And I mean, the other sort of standout, and like you mentioned, because it's not really a film about football, it's a film about Brian Clough. The one sort of important relationship in his life, and especially in his career, is that of Peter Taylor. And Timothy Spall is just amazing. Obviously, people will know him from like the Harry Potter franchise. If we've got anyone that's, maybe an American that tunes into this, who's just like, I don't know who you're talking about. It's the guy who plays Ron Weasley's rat. I forgot what's his name. Voldemort's sort of right hand man. For the life of me, for a guy that's supposed to review films, whenever it comes to actually talking about them on camera or on a microphone, it just leaves my brain.
I'm thinking, yeah, you could probably pick better things for Timothy Spall than Harry Potter. I remember him in a series of unfortunate events, but the movie, not the Netflix.
Yeah. No, I mean, he's in a ton of things. And obviously, yeah, Harry Potter's probably not his greatest work, but I think for recognisability for you know, potential people that see this, from this film, you get more of what Timothy Spall's about as an actor, because he complements Michael Sheen really well. He's got that sort of like that dark comedic, it's not dark humor in sort of like the vile sense. It's just sort of very sharp in it. It's very witty. It's very,
it's very British, you know, it's kind of like they have a very kind of north end of England. Quite dry sense of humour, which comes across in the foot. It's actually a really funny film if you have a particular sense of humour and you like football and you understand the period. But that's probably why the box office was so poor.
Yeah.
It's asking a lot of its audience. You know, not many people are gonna, even of our age. You know, I mean, there's no reason for me to be interested in Brian Clough and what happened with Leeds United, you know, 60 years ago. But it is, it's a good film, and it's just for me, what makes it actually a great film is the very few standout, because it can be a bit slow in parts.
Yeah, yeah.
But there are some really standout scenes which are, you know, top class.
Yeah, I mean, before we talk about those scenes, I just think, again, we mentioned it with Girl. I think the one point that it seems to be, or for these two football films at least, the tone setting, other than that, the visual sort of element that I mentioned with it very looking very 60s, 70s, is the like when the film starts, other than the montages that set the tone really well and the little descriptive sort of sections that sort of break it down, which will be really helpful for people, should say, for people that don't have a clue what's going on. It really sort of brings you into it. It's like the grim up north, grim Midlands vibe of it's just bucketing it down all the time. It's always really muddy. It's really dark. It's really...
It's accurate.
It is really accurate. Yeah, we don't get quite a lot of sunshine in these parts, do we? And it's... I really enjoyed it. It just felt like, oh, this is... Because it's kind of, like you mentioned, it's very subtle, but they have tongue-in-cheeked it a little bit. We do get days like that where it like belts it down like some sort of monsoon, but it's not super common. It rains, but like every time that there's something in this film like that, it like hams it up to 11. It adds to tone. It's definitely, I think, partially comedic, even though it's not fully, you know, it's not going for laughs. It's just going for, oh, bloody hell, I don't want to play football in that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I just, yeah, the grim up north vibe, we'll call it, I quite liked. And yeah, I guess the other sort of characters in this film is also like Colm Meaney, who's a really famous Irish actor.
He was in Con Air, right?
Yeah, yeah, he's in a lot of quite big films where you just sort of forget and then you're like, oh, bloody hell, yeah, he's in that.
He gets his car taken off, right? John Cusack, like, flies off his car.
And he, as a Leeds United fan, I have seen interviews with Don Revie. I know what he sounds like. I know his mannerisms. And not only does this film get everyone, they look like the people they're meant to be, with a few exceptions, which we'll mention. Other than that, he just nails it. Again, like, obviously this film's mainly Michael Sheen's film, but it's crux. It is like a vendetta film in a way, because it's he's been wronged by Don Revie back in the 60s, and he wants to get back at him. And the whole, whether this is true to life or not, the whole through line of the film is his, you know, his take on trying to be, you know, one up Don Revie. And obviously for that reason, you've got to look at him as an actor as well, and how he plays Don Revie. Even though he's not in as many scenes, he doesn't have as many lines, he's still spot on. Like, from a Leeds United fan perspective, I was just like, this really good. Whether his demeanour and mannerisms and how he acted as a person were like that or not, the way that he portrays him in this film is very accurate. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, you buy it for sure. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, no, you definitely get it. I guess the one big one, I wrote it in capital letters. It's just like, bam. I was like, need to mention it, because if you didn't pick up on it, then there's a problem. Wigs. Just, this film is...
It was the 70s, mate. I mean, nobody has hair like that now, so...
I know. And I wouldn't expect, like, poor old Liverpudlian Stephen Graham to... To, you know, have to stick, you know, grow his hair out and diet ginger and curl it a little bit and go for the whole Billy Bremner look, who's an ex Leeds United player. For those who don't know, like, one of the most famous Leeds United players.
Arguably, the most famous.
Yeah, he's the player that all Leeds born players all sort of look up to, like Leeds United's Calvin Phillips that we've got now plays in a very similar sort of role. And he's an idol of his, even though he probably won't have ever grown up seeing him in the flesh. He's got his own statue outside the ground. Billy Bremner is a big deal. But in this film, obviously, because it's not really about Leeds United, he doesn't look great. None of the Leeds players get really that many lines, do they? They're just sort of... They're painted as antagonists, basically, for the whole film.
There's an element of truth that there's a lot. I think the one thing you got to mention as well with this book is just the sheer that, like, I mean, even the lawsuits, I think there have been like three lawsuits after its release of people suing the people that made the film and the bloke that wrote the book. And I mean, I think nobody comes into a film, even one that's, you know, a fictionalized, essentially biopic, thinking it's all true to life. But the kind of acrimony between, or Brian Clough's theory on like how football should be played and the way Leeds United played back then is that you can't dispute that.
No.
I mean, it's there's no reason, I don't think, for the players to. They're not supposed to be characters with dimension. They're supposed to be thugs that kick people around and won games of football by doing it, which might be a bit one-dimensional, but villains often are, you know. So I think I like the fact that I think the footballers are cast well. I liked Stephen Graham as Billy Bremner. And as we mentioned before, the one part I did really like is that even though those are all good actors, you forget what's his name, Martin Compston, Steve Arnott from Line of Duty, right? He's in the movie as well. They can all play the game. So the scene that I wanted to, the only thing I wanted to talk about really.
Yeah, go on.
The training scene at the beginning, it's shot in a way which it's a believable training scene. You feel like you've just taken an iPhone out. Not an iPhone, right? But you feel like it could be. You've just taken a camera out, a training game in, you know, on a muddy field somewhere. They can all play the game. They're moving the ball around properly. And Michael Sheen anyone knows about football and acting probably knows Michael Sheen's actually a decent player as well. So the scene where he turns on that, I'm going to spoil it because I love the scene when he's introduced to all these thugs they're not supposed to be technically very good footballers. He juggles the ball a few times, turns on it, and then volleys it into the net and says, "Let's see, you know, Don Revy do that." And you know, that's the best part. That kind of sets off the tone of the film. Like, I'm the boss here. I know how to play football properly. You all follow me. So yeah, I love that part.
Yeah, no, it's it is on my list of notes that I put down is the fact that he, I don't know if you watch this, there's a show on Sky that's called There's Something About Movies. It's hosted by Alan Carr.
I've not seen it.
Michael Sheen is one of he's the main sort of team captain. There's two teams and he's like always the guy that's on it, which is really impressive to be fair, considering like you, I don't know whether we've got the wrong impression of him or maybe it's just that he just likes doing stuff like this, but he's got a really big pedigree, yet he's just happy to just be on sort of anything and just be involved. He's quite happy-go-lucky.
A job's a job, man. Maybe he just needs the money.
Maybe. I mean, they mentioned it because I think it was probably by the time this comes out, maybe 2 weeks ago. So for any UK listeners or watchers, go check it out on Sky. If you're not, then probably be a clip on the internet somewhere. But it had Stephen Graham was on the opposition's team and they were sort of having a bit of banter about, again, they mentioned the terrible wigs. Like I can't remember who he compares him to, but he said that he didn't look like Billy Bremner, he looked like so-and-so, and everyone was like laughing. But he came out and they pulled the goal out because they do like, it's very much one of those shows where they go out and do like scenes and fuck about really. And he's like, oh, I'll give you an extra.
You don't have to swear on this podcast. You didn't tell me that.
But yeah, they mess about a bit. And basically he goes, all right, you can have an extra point if you can do that. Cause I don't think you can do that. I reckon that it was either a stunt man or you had about 30 takes. And Michael Sheen gets really, really like pent up about it. It's like, oh, actually it only took 3 scenes. I just sort of did it. And you know, 3 takes and it was done. And you can't really tell whether he's joking or not. He does it, and he actually still in the actual studio from one take, doesn't score. He like punts it at a cameraman, which might have been on purpose. But he does the headers, the knees up, the kick ups, and then volleys it. And he's wearing like a full sort of like suit or jeans. You know, it's something really awkward to be able to do that. He is a good footballer. Like he genuinely is good.
Did he do a soccer aid? Maybe not this year, but last year.
He's done it before. Yeah, he has. He's done it before. I mean,
they invite anyone on that thing, man. Like I'm trying to get on that next year. Like, I mean, they had that guy. What's it, that other YouTube guy? I forget the guy. He missed the penalty so badly.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Like, I know what you mean.
Just get me on that show, man. I'm just gonna go through flipping. What's his name? Robbie Williams or that Johnny Wilkes or whatever.
Smash Ollie Murs.
Oh yeah, man. Just nutmeg him a few times and a few cheeky elbows in the face. I'm joking.
Yeah, get some tips from this film, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to think what else we can really talk about. I did find it really funny, the, you know, in British sort of football humour, I guess. The good old magic sponge, magic bucket, and the fact that there's just no stretches in this period. So it's like, yeah. I think it's the first game that they play where the vendetta kind of like starts, I guess, where he realises that, you know, he's been ignored by him. He's not going to acknowledge him. They're in a division below him because it's like an FA Cup game. But they get the takeout on the Derby players, and the guy just runs on with a little bucket, like rubs his knee, and then like hoists him off. It's like probably caused further injury. But obviously it's different times. But it's really funny, like stuff like that. When you watch it now, you're just like they've captured it really well, because that will have been how it'll have been. It's just
isn't it? I mean, games, I don't want to sound like an old man, but even while I've been alive, the game's changed a lot. I remember there's a scene in the Damned United where I think it does like a close-up on the goalkeeper. He's not even wearing gloves, and you think, good Lord, like I wouldn't want to be trying the balls I used to play with back then as well, like rocks, man. I wouldn't want to be trying to catch one of those without any gloves on. In the mud as well. Like, it's a wonder all the games weren't like 15, 12 or something like that.
Yeah, in the days when shorts really, really were short as well. Like the sort of like the, I'm trying to think of the correct word, the wardrobe, I guess, for this film is very, very,
you know what, I wanted to mention as well is the most surprising part of that movie, or one of, is how good was Kevin Keegan's physique? And it's the scene where there's a part where Keegan's get, I forget who.
Bremner, him and Bremner have a.
Bremner gives him the right hook or something. I don't know.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Then they get sent off, right? And Keegan takes his shirt off, and I'm like,
Jesus.
Damn.
Yeah.
This is before they even knew how to weight train properly and stuff. I'm like, wow.
This is in an era where Brian Clough turns up, and this is completely true. You know, he turns up, they're on the training pitch that used to be next to Elland Road, and they're all just having a fag break mid-training. This is that era. This is the era where, you know, physique, sports nutrition, all those things.
Wasn't football better then, though? I love football. I can't even. I can watch it now. I still watch it, but like I enjoy football more from like the 80s and 90s and stuff like that. Maybe not the 80s because I was a kid, but I mean it was better back then. You have like a cigarette at halftime, few beers at night time. You come out. It's not all about pace and technical ability. It's all about like, you know, just playing the game.
It was just pure spectacle.
I'm starting old now. Yeah.
Well, I don't remember the 80s. Let's put it that way. I guess sort of going with that theme as well, like obviously this is a film podcast.
We've digressed.
You're a Leeds fan, I guess. I'm definitely a Leeds United fan, if you couldn't tell already. So even though they are villainous in this film, and you know, people can have their own opinions as to whether they could play football or not, I'm firm believer that there were some very gifted players. Eddie Gray, for example, Peter Lorimer, apparently still looked at as some of the best wingers in the game from that sort of period. The scene where they're walking up to Derby's ground for the FA Cup, the fact that they even, as it from a Leeds fan perspective, they put Don Reeves' dossiers are mentioned in it, the superstitions. And the fact that the way that they are on the pitch with the clapping and the turning round, like people will watch it and think, oh, maybe that's just dumb because it's a 70s film. They're trying to give that vibe. These are all real things that Don Revie brought in to change the culture of Leeds United before he joined. He turned them into superstars, basically. These are like the sports rock stars of the time. Like when they walk into the ground, all the people are running at them. You obviously wouldn't get that. Now, you do get people that queue next to the barriers when they come off of the bus trying to get a high five or a, you know, picture or whatever when players turn up now. But they usually all got their headphones on. They walk straight in, little smile and walk in. Back then, this film captures Leeds in that particular era, at least, as being exactly how I've been brought up to be told what they're like, and for me that just added to it.
Yeah, I mean it catches football, and I mean it kind of delves into that because you got Jim Broadbent, right, as the I forget the guy's name, director, chairman,
Uncle Sam at Derby.
Yeah. He kind of catches it in that probably its period of biggest transition from the like late 70s coming into the early 80s when more of the game's dictated by money, and it kind of covers that a little bit when Brian Clough just starts buying players. without consulting the boss, which I like. I think it does a lot to kind of, if you're really into football, like you're a bit of a football nerd and you're into your football history and stuff, it does a really good job of showing you what, you know, the late 70s and stuff were about in terms of how football was changing. And they weren't all like they are now, right? You'd see them in the local pub or whatever. Some of them even had, you know, other jobs that they were doing, you know. I think even says that it's something like you can't pay a footballer 300 quid a month or something like that.
At the time it's like 300 quid a week that he says, yeah, in that line.
That's a lot of money. And like, what are they earning now? Like, I don't know, 300,000 quid a week.
So. Yeah, it's insane. I'm glad you actually brought up Jim Broadbent. Jim Broadbent is another firm favourite of mine for like British, like, staple films, you know, where he appears, and again he's another person that just sort of like whenever he's on, he just commands the scene like really well, because he's either really funny, really harsh, or again like you made with the mention of Timothy Spall, is just really British. And in that one, that line when he's so northern, even though I don't know whether he was from Derby, it's obviously Midlands, it's still, you know, debate whether you class it as north or south, who knows, but I don't know where the actual character was from. He says that it's his hometown club. But either way, that is still kind of how people up north are now. Like, how much? Well, spending that. It's a very, it just captures everything so well.
It's got a lot of really good one-liners in it as well that you kind of, if you're into like, again, if you're into film, you can really enjoy this one. I love the part where Brian Clough's in the, he does an interview at the start before he officially joins Leeds United, right? And he goes into a boardroom because he said some things he probably shouldn't have. And they say, you know, we like you, Brian. We think you're the best young manager in the country. And he says, yeah, I'm the best old one too. And I like the one where he says he's on the I think it's on Parkinson, right? Which doesn't exist now, but it's a chat show. Our version of Letterman. And he says, yeah, how good are you as a manager? And Brian Clough says, well, I wouldn't say I'm the best manager, but I'm in the top one. And all these kind of things, which really, that's how Brian Clough was. So it's accurate, but it's funny as well. So.
Yeah, no, it is. I mean, if you compare any interviews that are shown in this, they've clearly recreated footage that was available for the BBC archives or the ITV archives or however they've got hold of them. Some of them probably are on YouTube, and you probably could watch them side by side, and you just get the same.
I'm thinking of it just came back to me now. The scene with Muhammad Ali as well. That's in fact that gives you a good idea of how big a deal Brian Clough was at the time.
Yeah,
because you know Brian Clough's so outspoken. Everyone knows Muhammad Ali, right? And there's a famous scene where Muhammad, I can't remember what show Muhammad Ali's on at the time, but he says, oh, I hear about this guy called Brian Clough. He's always talking Clough. I've had enough. And then there's Michael Sheen playing Brian Clough watching that clip. And say, well, are you going to stop them, Brian? He says, no, I'm going to fight him. And,
yeah.
You know, it's stuff like that really makes it an endearing film. You know,
yeah, no, I think that they could have done this film without putting that scene in, but that scene is definitely put in there for the worldwide audience to just realise this guy was a big deal and things did go very wrong. In this, what this film's trying to show is where it messed up, and it does it so well by just shooting. It's only like a couple of seconds in. It's a very small clip in it, and it's just through it. But that for anyone that's never heard of any, you know, you listen to this podcast, this is all news to you now. But that, if anything that we've said, you're just like, oh, they're just saying it because the football fans. That gives you an idea as to how important or how big a deal this guy was at the time. So yeah, 100%. That's it's a great scene, a really good joke as well.
I was wondering as well, watching the film at the end, I was thinking, I wonder if they could ever do like a movie like this about like Mourinho at Man United or something like that, you know?
Yeah.
You ever think that?
Yeah,
I
maybe.
Think, like, I would watch it, you know? I'd love to watch it because there aren't that many good sports movies, let's put it that way, especially football ones. We said that at the beginning.
Yeah.
I'd watch something like that, you know? Because you don't really get to see a lot of the behind the scenes stuff and what the people psychologically go through. I'd watch like a Wenger documentary. I need to buy his book, actually. I'm an Arsenal fan. I've not bought the book yet.
Yeah, I agree. There is literally like so many scenarios in modern football now that maybe, you know, in 10, 15, 20 years' time, they could definitely... I mean, one that I would revel as an early United fan in the chance of just being able to watch, enjoy and laugh my head off would be a Ole Gunnar Solskjaer sort of biopic film about how he's absolutely dismantled Manchester United. That would... It should be a car crash.
United fans, you need to let that go, man. Like, I don't get it. What's the thing with Man United? It's not even like... I think that's like a 30-year-old... longer 40, 50 year old rivalries, need to let it pass.
War of the Roses, man, it's deep ingrained in its DNA. I'm surprised it's not slowly sort of like nudging at you, even though, you know, you're from this neck of the woods.
Oh man, don't get me wrong, I don't like seeing Man United do well, but I'm not I don't have this obsession with them doing it. To me, it's funny to see them fall apart, you know, from being such a you know, an unshakable force in football. But I tell you what would work as a film. If they did it well, I could see it turning out to be a bit goal-esque if they did it. But Jamie Vardy's career, that would be another good one.
And this is great. I need to get you on more often because literally we should have just done a section of scenarios that could make really good football films to solve this weird football problem, this film football problem that we've got. Maybe we could do that. Definitely. Time.
I think the Jamie Vardy thing will definitely happen if, and it's a big if. Let's say Euro 21 happens, right? Because it's not Euro 20 now.
Yeah.
Euro 21 happens. Gareth Southgate picks up the phone and says, Jamie, you know, Harry Kane's crocked or whatever. You come out of international retirement. Then we get to the final. Vardy scores the winner. You can bet your bottom dollar all the Hollywood producers will be like, yeah, let's do this. That's a script from non-league right up to the World Cup final.
Yeah. Because of the reasons I've got you on here, I'm just going to wheel it back to talking about me and Leeds United. But I still lament the day that when we had good old Ken Bates, one of the old chairmen of Leeds United, who, let's just put it for people that probably have no idea what I'm saying, he didn't like to spend any money and we weren't particularly doing too well. We had the opportunity to sign Jamie Vardy for a very, very, very small sum, but that was still too much, apparently. And now look at him. Look what could have been.
Yeah. Well, I mean, back in the Premier League now, you can't complain.
Yeah,
you've got
no.
Paddy B, super packed, Bam Bam Bamford. I'd be surprised. There's nobody listening to this podcast anymore, man. Like, we've gone too much into the sports angle.
Well, I guess, unless you've got anything else you want to mention, I had so many notes. We could very easily have done this for 2 hours. I don't know if you'd have liked that, but I could have done that. I've got so many notes about this film.
I finished all my editing today, especially. I got phone in the train at about 6 o'clock. I got my coffee on. I've been editing all day. I thought, I'm all set for an afternoon of chit chat about nonsense and Brian Clough, which happened 10 years before I was born. What a way.
Well, you know, if you're ready, we can go for some whatnot. No, I'm kidding. I guess the big question then is. Is it a B right or is it a proper shite? I think I know your answer, but I've got to ask.
B right is the good one, yeah. I'm familiar with the concept.
I'm just, you know, because, you know, we're from Yorkshire. I was trying to think of something that kind of like matches. It's very loose, but B right, it's good.
I like the name. I just want to make sure I've got it like right, the concept right. But to me, it's the best football. It's not really about football, but if you want to call it a football film, it's probably the best football film ever made. I'm a bit sad we couldn't talk a bit about Escape to Victory, but yeah, it's B-rate.
Hey, look, football is a game of two halves. It's also a game where you play each other twice a season. So, you know, I've got both the home and the away Leeds United shirt. So, you know, for continuity's sake, get you back on for the away leg when we go down to the Emirates,
yeah.
Can pick another couple of films. And, you know, to be honest, I'm going to be really honest. For someone that likes films, absolutely loves football, there is a big gap in my viewership of watching football-related films. Obviously, I watch the Damned United because why wouldn't I have? But there is a lot that I haven't seen. You know, like, and then...
Escape to Victory is a classic. Have you seen that one?
No. So, again, see, you know what I mean? Like...
Escape to Victory, real quick. We could get into it in more detail maybe if I come back on to the next one. But Escape to Victory is basically like Goal, but a really good version of Goal because there are no cameos. The footballers are actually in the films as like main characters.
Right,
you've got, like,
that
Pelé
already sounds
in the
better.
Film.
That sounds bad.
So, what else could you want? It's an amazing film.
Yeah, it already sounds better. I mean, I did the legwork of looking for all, you know, pretty much every single film that is to do with football, that has got like some sort of football related theme, or that, you know, like a documentary that's sort of become like this sort of art house type film. I made a massive list of them. These two just sort of stood out as like the very obvious choices to try and do first. But I am more than happy to talk about some more, because it gives me a reason to watch them. Because, you know, I go through life just people recommending films, or I see stuff and I get distracted by like a new release, or like, oh, well, that came out a couple of months ago, I'm going to see, and I just never get around to doing it. But if I've actually got home...
Well, by buying a PlayStation 5, I've seen your Twitter feed, I've seen it.
Well, yeah, you know, it was very difficult. It was either play on that or come talk to you. And obviously I'm here, so what more do you...
You'd be itching to get away and play it.
Yeah, so I guess with that, we should probably wrap this up, unless you've got else you want to say.
No, not really. I'd love to come back on and do, like, not necessarily sports movies only. But yeah, I enjoy talking about that. I'm not sure how much that one is going to appeal to a mass audience, but yeah, I'd love to come back on.
We'll find something. We need to find like some sort of foodie film. Have you watched Chef?
There's probably one, and that's Chef.
Have you watched it?
And I haven't seen it all the way through, no.
Right, I've only seen a bit of it as well, so that's another one. I'm just shoehorning you into as many as you can, man. I want those sweet, sweet subscribers.
I'm not sure this podcast has done anything for that, but we can but hope. Transition.
And that is the end of a very special Be Right or Proper Shite Reviews episode. Big thank you again to Beard for coming along and chatting soccer ball with me. We'll have to get you on, like I said, we'll have to get you on the reverse fixture. And you've already invited yourself onto about three other different episode types. So I guess you're here now, aren't you?
Oh, yeah.
I guess it would be amiss of me to not ask you what your score predictions are for Sunday. I know you briefly mentioned it.
I think you meant to say remiss. It would be remiss of you, yeah. I think Leeds 2-0.
Ooh, is that you?
Fair enough. I'm back in, yeah. I mean, Aubameyang's not, he's, I don't want to say he's misfiring because he's a quality player, but, you know, he's short of a bit of confidence. Arsenal had a big wobble. International break, I think Leeds will come back fresher. I'll put it like this: if Alioski's playing, definitely United win. I love that guy.
Did you see his celebrations for North Macedonia making it?
I did. I feel kind of a kinship with Alioski, not just because he's, you know, a bit mad, but also because he's another well-known athlete without the blue tick on Twitter. What's going on? It's me and Alioski. It's a joke.
I'm sure you've mentioned this before, but yeah, keep mentioning it. Eventually it'll stick, you know, something will happen. They've added that stupid stories thing onto Twitter, so surely they can give you a tick now.
Surely. Well, who knows?
Yeah, I'll take 2-0. I mean, yeah, Arsenal have got a load of sort of coronavirus and injury related stuff, haven't they? We've got a couple of people coming back from injury. I think I'm going to go 2-1 because we need a win. I think our defence is still trying to find its feet in the Premier League after that big Ben White-shaped hole from when we got promoted. But
doesn't he just look sad playing for Brighton? I'm looking at him and I'm like, oh, he looks so sad. He wants to just be there watching Bielsa drink his coffee on his bucket. Instead, he's just spraying passes to whoever, Callum Wilson or whoever's up front from now. I don't know.
I was going to say, like, in the end of the Damned United, there's a lot of sort of like Brighton stuff, isn't there, as well. I was like, they're trying to make him the force in English football and all that carry on. I was like, our big rivals, Brighton. Yeah. But yeah, where can, I'm guessing if this section of this makes it to YouTube, that people will somehow know who you are already. But where can people find you, Beard?
I would just type in like Beard Food, or Beard Eats, or Bearded Man Eating Stuff. into YouTube, you'll find me. I just type in competitive eater British. I'm the only one, really.
So you're not even, you've just done away with even just promoting yourself as your own sort of channel. It's all that sweet SEO, isn't it, that you've got now going on. It's just like beard, food. Oh, it's this guy.
Promos are too much. I've got a Wikipedia page. No, I don't need no promos.
Oh, how the other half live, eh? As always, you can give us a follow on Twitter. My handle is @the_film_fella. You can also find us on Facebook @thefilmfella and friends, and you can follow us on Instagram @thefilmfella. In other big news, obviously, this is very obvious if this particular section makes it to YouTube, that I've now put some stuff on YouTube. You're unlucky for all you guys there, but if you want to check out some very short reviews, because these podcast episodes tend to go on for a little while, I've made a new series called Real Views, which is super tiny, concise little videos to match my editing ability. So go check those out, subscribe, like. it'll hopefully make a difference. I will hopefully be putting the audio of those videos as well on the podcast as well, so if you prefer to just listen to me and you don't want to look at my face, they'll be there. Our website's also had a slight revamp, so you can go check out all the articles that we put on there that's to do with the podcast, do with the videos. Put a thing up about PlayStation 5 TVs the other day. Check them out. So that's thefilmfella.com. Hi Honey and Quadbanger will be back in the saddle soon. Unfortunately, you know, Adam's been kicking him whilst he's down, but he's had kidney stones, so he's been out of action for about a week.
That's no excuse. I mean, kidney stones, come on. You could do a podcast with kidney stones. I could win a hot dog contest with kidney stones.
Wow, laying down the gauntlet. But yeah, I just thought I'd give him a little bit of time off, you know. So that's why John has not made it to this episode and the past couple of real views. And Alex has currently just got a new job during all this lockdown situation. So giving him a bit of time to settle in. We're available on Apple Podcasts and Spotify and anywhere else you get your podcasts from. The RSS feed is in the description, as always, if you want to add it to anywhere else. Give us a subscribe, follow, star review, they all help out. If you fancy sending any questions, you can send us an email at thefilmfellaandfriends@gmail.com, or you can just tweet me. I don't care. More episodes of Be Right or Proper Shite Reviews are regular news episodes and our Real Natter interview series, where Beard was kindly episode number one, will be coming soon. I've got a couple of other guests in the pipeline for that. I just need to get them recorded, so look out for that. And if you want to support us, you can head to Patreon and chuck us a quid so I can feed Johnny or pay his medical bills. That's it. Keep it real.